When I first started cooking for my wife, which is to say, back when we were falling in love and realized we wanted each other to live forever, we had this little chant we'd do anytime I put collards or broccoli rabe on the table. Dark leafy greens! Dark leafy greens! We cheered for them like they were the hometown team because we're pretty convinced dark leafy greens will help you live forever. They're packed with vitamins and fiber and antioxidants and probiotics and all kinds of stuff I don't actually know anything about, but it feels great to eat stuff you know is good for you. Still, we eventually stopped thinking about greens' health benefits because we're just so happy to eat them because they're delicious. And the chef Jen Lewis feels the same way. She spent 2 years writing a new book, The Book of Greens. It's an A to Z collection of dozens of different kinds of greens and tons of recipes for what to do with them. Chef, so great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Francis.
This is a beautiful book, and it's so chock full of information on all these different kinds of greens. And, you know, I'm flipping through it, and the first one in the book is agretti, and I've literally never even heard of agretti. So, and, you know, there are like 300 more pages to go. So you might be the exact wrong person for me to say this to, but aren't most greens really the same?
That's a fair question. I mean, it's interesting because in the process of writing the book, I thought a lot about greens, the flavor profile of greens and what you use when you cook them. And there's a lot of similarities as far as what do greens taste like? Chlorophyll, right? So you have greener tasting greens, you have lemonier tasting greens. You know, I found myself over and over using, you know, a salty pork product, a lemon, anchovy, garlic, but they are green tasting.
Yeah.
Some are really hearty, like a kale or collards. Some are really delicate, like butter lettuce. And so I kind of thought about how they work seasonally, how they work texturally as far as the best uses for them. So like butter lettuce, you don't want to braise that. You could saute it really briefly and have a little bit of heat on it, but too much heat would really break it down. But then I would think about it as a fresh salad or, like in the book, I did a butter lettuce panna cotta, and I infused the flavor of those really tender inner leaves with cream and made a dessert with it and paired it with strawberries.
Oh, my God.
It's cool. Right. And so I really thought about them as the texture of the green, how much flavor they have. You know, I made shumai, and I put collard greens in there, and collard greens go great with Chinese food, and they hold up to pork really well. And so I looked at just different places where I could fit, you know, aloe into a cocktail and where greens would add nutrition to food, add flavor to food, whether it be that lemony chlorophyll or the grassy chlorophyll flavor.
And so when you're talking about the shumai, these are like the sort of open skin dumplings. And so you just chop them up and put them in there with the
Yeah,
filling?
I sauteed them with some mushrooms and added them to the pork and filled the wonton wrappers with them and steamed them. And so you have that extra flavor, extra texture. And, you know, most cultures outside of the U.S. serve greens in all different dishes. And they're not just a side salad or a braised green side. They put them in all different dishes. And we don't tend to do that here. And so it was kind of a fun look at, you know, internationally how greens are used.
You know, I haven't really thought of it like the way you're describing, but I do know when I'm at the market and I see a nice head of whatever, I see a nice bunch of collards, and I'll buy that without even knowing what to do with it. But I'll be like, okay, that's dinner on Tuesday. I'm going to figure out what to do with that. And usually Tuesday comes and I'm lazy, and what I'll do is I'll, you know, braise it down with maybe a little of anchovy and toss it with pasta. Or like it ends up being something very simple like that. But cooking a green as the focal point of a meal is something that does feel so intuitive in so many cultures. You're so right. So what are some of the more hidden all-stars for you? You have, you know, this big book of, you know, dozens and dozens of greens. What are some of the more underappreciated or unique ones that you've come across?
Well, I kind of like to think about the greens in three different kind of categories of how you get them. So you go to your grocery store and you can get kale, you can get arugula, you can get iceberg, you can get all those, you know, very common greens. And then you go to the farmer's market And you can get more unique greens, whether it be more heirloom varieties or something a little bit more unique, like maybe some cool mustard greens that you don't see in the grocery store. And then the third way that I think you find the most cool little gems is that you plant a garden. And I have a really cool garden at my house. It's an urban garden and it's pretty big and I grow a lot of food. And I try to grow varieties or vegetables that you can't get at the farmer's market or the grocery store. And the other hidden gems are stuff that you find when you're traveling. When I was writing this book, I had two trips, one to Vietnam and one to Hong Kong. And I was blown away by the varieties of greens in Asia. So, and again, Asian grocery stores are amazing resources for cool greens. But I think that there's really, some of them are really interesting, like chickweed. It kind of reminds me of what you find on the playground, you know, in the grass. It's really, really nutritious, and it's very lemony flavored. And so it pairs nicely with something a little sturdy, or it could be accompanied raw with something cooked, like in the book I have it with arepas. And there's an egg that's cooked in the arepa. And so it's something that's clean, a clean flavor paired with something that's a little richer.
Oh, yeah, I love that. The arepas, they're like corn cakes, like really thick tortillas, essentially. And they're sort of heavy and they're earthy. And I love the idea of that lemony green with that. That's super
cool. Yeah, it's nice because it cleans it up, you know? I have this wonderful recipe I love. It is for salted herbs, and it's something that they use in eastern Canada, so like near Montreal. And you take carrots and celery, et cetera, and you salt them, and they preserve, and you use them to season food. And it's something that's really unique. And I did them, and it had green onions and Vietnamese coriander leaves and chives and endive and celery and carrots. And so it's crunchy, but super salty, and it preserves in the fridge for a good solid, you know, 2-3 weeks. And you can season fried rice with it. You can season a soup with it or scrambled eggs. And it's a way to season your food, but you have all of that other flavor from the vegetables in it.
Do you chop up all the herbs?
Yeah, everything's chopped up pretty finely. All the vegetables pick up all of the flavor from the salt and kind of become part of that salty flavor.
You know, when you were talking about hidden gems before, my mind immediately went to beets or turnips, and I buy them and they come with these beautiful bunches of greens on top, and everyone takes them, cuts them, throws them away, and one day I realize, no wait, that's food. Like I just got
Absolutely.
Free food with my food.
So I know.
Talk about the free food that comes with your food.
I know, that's hilarious. It's true. And having a conversation recently with someone, I said, did you know that broccoli has leaves? And they're like, what?
They're the best.
I know, and you never see them because where do they go? They clip them off, and I think it's for perishability reasons. I think that the leaves will deteriorate before the head of broccoli, and so for you know, mass production, they take the leaves off. But there's all these leaves that are really delicious, and you know, beet greens are unique because they're going to have that beety redness. And so if you don't want your food that you're going to include your beet greens into to turn red, blanch them first and squeeze them out so that a lot of that color comes out. There's all these leaves, cauliflower leaves. They can be pretty fibrous, so you can cut them kind of fine and toss them in with your stir fry. You can toss them in with your pasta. You know, carrot greens make salsa verde. It's nice with carrot greens because they're pretty grassy flavored. It's kind of nice to cut them with a few other herbs like basil or mint and balance them out. But all of these things can be used and eaten, and they're food. Free food with your food.
Yeah, so I am totally on team, you know, green leaves that come stuck to other things that you should also eat. But there was one in your book that I was really surprised by, and that's tomato leaves. Because I've never tried to eat them, but I remember touching them one time on a friend's tomato plant. I couldn't get the smell off me, and I was like, that's got to be poison, right? Like, but you can eat tomato leaves.
Right. Most people think they are poisonous, and they're not. They are a part of the nightshade family. They're not poisonous. I have put them in a bunch of different things. They are a little fuzzy at times, so sometimes cooking them like nettles, you don't want to eat raw. But I have a recipe for putting them in pasta and basically blanching them and then putting them in with the egg and the liquid and making your pasta with them. And they're delicious. They have a great flavor. I love cooking with them. Same with squash vine leaves. People don't think you can eat the leaves from your zucchini plant. And there's a wonderful Sicilian soup, and they use the squash leaves.
I love that you're opening minds to the other free food that comes with your food.
For sure.
Thank you so much. I feel so green smoothie energized right now. Thank you so much, Jen, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Jen Lewis is the chef of Ray Restaurant in Portland, Oregon, and the author of The Book of Greens. And from that book, she left us with a recipe for that terrific condiment, salted herbs. Oh, and another one for that crazy dessert she came up with, butter lettuce panna cotta. You'll find both those recipes at splendidtable.org. And you know, I was kind of just kidding with Jen when I asked her if all greens were really the same, but honestly, as much as I love them, I do think greens mostly taste like variations of one another, which means you can usually swap them with impunity. So here's what I do when I'm shopping and come across greens I've never had before. I'll grab a leaf, I'll pop it in my mouth, I'll see how it goes. Now, there's a very slim chance that the greens you're looking at might be inedible raw, like stinging nettle, so if you're ever unsure, ask first. But when I'm chewing, I'm looking first for the texture. Is it delicate or chewy or tough? If it's firmer, I think about braising it with some onions and garlic and maybe like, you know, a bacon-like thing. Or with soy sauce or fish sauce with some mushrooms and a touch of sugar. That's so good. And if the texture is light and delicate, you know, then you think about a salad or maybe a quick wilt in the pan. And if the texture is somewhere in the middle, you can think about sautéing it, maybe with some chili flakes and lemon or with a little bit of ginger and oyster sauce. Or the other way to think about it is to go by flavor. If the greens are sweet, consider eating them raw or just cooking very lightly. If they're sharp and mustardy, then blanch them or sauté them. And if they're deep and bittersweet, then braise them down. It's basically a framework of the more intense the greens are, the more you cook them to mellow them out. It's a pretty simple concept, but it works almost all the time.